Right. Well, welcome. And as Patricia has explained, we were very pleased to receive some funding from UKCLE to look into this very interesting and rather under-researched area of the pedagogic impact of law school sabbaticals. Now, this particular project follows on from an earlier one that Maureen and I had been involved in, which was looking at sabbaticals in law schools rather more generally. And that research was very much in the spirit of the tradition that was developing of investigation into the private life of the law school that we see reflected in the work of people like Fiona Cowney, Collier, and so on. So our initial research is going back to our pre-2007 or so findings related to law schools in general and their approach to the awarding of sabbaticals. So that research was eventually published in the form of an article in Legal Studies in 2007. So a number of things came out of that research that really sparked our interest in the area. We began to feel that sabbaticals represented a particular aspect of working life that really did need some further investigation. A very important area in terms of staff opportunities to develop themselves in their research, and as we'll see, in other areas as well. And we were prompted, really, to think about how we might take that research further forward. And one particular area that we wanted to look at was whether there was some sort of link between the award of a sabbatical and teaching. And we were particularly prompted to think about this by an article in the Times Higher by Mick Healy, which was published in February 2000, where Mick Healy advocated the possibility of awarding a sabbatical on condition of producing a pedagogic impact statement. So he was looking at what possible benefits there could be from the award of sabbaticals in terms of developing one's teaching and proposing this particular element. So really building on that idea and other published research in relation to sabbaticals generally, we put in our bid to UKCLE, which was successful, and started our researches in the area. Now, we decided that we would go forward on the basis of exploring through an electronic survey the approach to the award of a sabbatical in various law schools in different regions across the country. And indeed, the regions covered particular geographical areas such as obviously London, the South East, Midlands, South West, Wales, and then it was extended to cover Scotland as well. So we were looking to have a fairly comprehensive spread while accepting that this was going to be a fairly, in a sense, small scale study in terms of the approaches to the individuals we were actually reaching. So the way we went about it was to produce an electronic survey which was sent out to the heads of law schools in the various regions in question. And these heads of law schools were selected from the list of those law schools that offer qualifying law degrees. So it was sort of self-limiting in that way. And we made use of some very helpful software that some of you may have used yourselves called SurveyMonkey. Now, I have to say that I had never come across SurveyMonkey before, being somewhat new to this type of research. And I became quite a convert, I think Maureen also, because it meant that it was possible to use the software in order to send out a questionnaire and then for those respondents who replied to deal with the responses as they came in and see how the survey was progressing. It wasn't necessary to feed the data into any other software system, anything like SPSS, for example. So we had a very helpful technician at Middlesex University, to whom we're extremely indebted, who gave very freely of his time, John Kushapas. And without him, I think we would have been struggling. But with his help, we were able to examine the data and deal with it really, I hope, reasonably efficiently. And the software converts the data into various forms that are quite accessible, such as pie charts and so on. So I think it really is quite a useful way of conducting this type of research. Now, what we were doing in approaching the heads of law schools was trying to be, in a sense, practical about how we might reach the constituency that we were trying to get the information from. Of course, there are other ways one could go about conducting such a survey. And if we go back to our previous research done a few years before, that was paper-based. And because it was paper-based, it was possible for us to track exactly who had replied and who had not, send out reminders, and so on. Now, one of the drawbacks of doing research using this SurveyMonkey electronic approach, given that we were guaranteeing anonymity to those who were replying, was that we couldn't follow up who had replied and who had not. So there was a sort of period of nagging where we were both getting in touch with departmental secretaries saying, please ensure that your head of department passes this on to people. But we didn't really have any immediate way of knowing whether he or she had actually done that or not. So this is a clear limitation of the research. Now, in some cases, we could see that the message had been forwarded, because there was a question, as we'll see, that respondents were asked whether they were willing to volunteer to take part in follow-up interviews. So where individuals identified themselves and said, yes, we're happy to meet you, clearly we knew that those people had received a survey at the very least. But we didn't know in all cases whether they had or not. And one of the reasons that we decided to go for this electronic approach, despite its obvious limitations, was that we were very worried about postal strike. So this all sounds rather mechanistic, but you don't want to end up with a grant which has a limited period to run and you're unable to fulfill it because you really can't follow things through on a reasonable kind of time scale. So weighing up the pros and cons, nevertheless, it did actually still seem a reasonable way to proceed. So after some nagging, we were assured that things would be dealt with, that messages would be forwarded and so on. And in some cases, they clearly were. So what I'm kind of leading up to is that the response rate, which is really about 15%, doesn't sound very impressive, but has to be read in the context of what I've just been saying, that the alternative, if we'd done it through paper, might have been to end up with an even lower response rate. So we basically contacted quite a small number, initially about 10 universities spread across those regions that I've mentioned. Where it emerged from an early inquiry that those institutions did not have a sabbatical policy, contrary to apparent information that we'd been researching on the web. It became necessary when they identified that problem for us to substitute other universities, which we did in a few cases, four or five cases. But we did end up with responses from about 10. So I think there are still quite a lot of advantages to that approach, but clearly also a number of disadvantages. Now, in terms of the types of university, we seem not to have got colour on this, which is, can I just check something for a minute? It's just that first one. Never mind, I don't quite know why the colour isn't appearing on that first slide. But What we can see is that the, or you would if the colour was showing properly, that about a third of the types of the universities that returned were from pre-1992 and about two-thirds from post. So I'm going to move on quickly to ones where the colour is rather more satisfactory and it seems to have worked. Now, looking at the regions, where is your university? The respondents were asked to identify themselves, how they saw their university being located. We find it not particularly surprising that there was such a preponderance of respondents in London and the South East, because indeed there is a high concentration of law schools in those regions. Now, the next question was whether a particular university law department had entered the RAE as a separate university assessment, sorry, a separate unit of assessment or part of another unit. And we can see there that the vast majority of respondents indeed had been part of an entry. So this is really helping us to build up the picture of what kind of universities are engaging in sabbaticals. The next question concerned respondent and the RAE. Question doesn't quite make sense. Looking at the individual, just moving on to the next point, the next question was whether the particular individual respondent had been awarded a sabbatical from his or her current university. And interestingly, we can see that nearly half of those people who replied had actually been awarded a sabbatical. Now, this is quite interesting because there's perhaps a widespread feeling, not necessarily based on analysis, that universities are reluctant to award sabbaticals during difficult economic times. But at least our research so far is showing that of those who are motivated to reply, most, or half at least, had been awarded a sabbatical. Then we moved on to looking at the reason for being awarded a sabbatical. And indeed, as you can see, that the areas, the reasons for which a sabbatical might be awarded, above all, covered conducting scholarly research, which was the category we were expecting everybody to be identifying. And then we were looking at whether any of the other categories might have been recognised. Now, given that we're looking to see what links there are between research and teaching and how a sabbatical might tie in with developing teaching, we were particularly interested to see whether any sabbaticals had in fact been awarded for any of the other categories, such as engaging in the preparation of teaching materials or other work related to teaching. Now, in the previous period that we'd studied for the in our earlier research, indeed, we did find that some sabbaticals had been awarded for the preparation of teaching materials. But looking at this study, very much in the run-up to the RAE, it's not particularly surprising that that category seemed to have disappeared in the period in question. Now, you'll notice that there was one category which refers to other. So I was interested to see, you know, what other covered. But surprise, surprise, when we looked at the other category, it was actually only one respondent. And it was really still the first category, conducting scholarly research. This person had been visiting a colleague with similar academic interests in Australia. So really no surprises there. So sabbaticals in this run-up to the 2008 RAE were clearly substantially being awarded, entirely awarded, according to our respondents, for research and scholarly purposes. Now, looking at how the respondents saw the impact of their sabbatical on teaching and the curriculum, we've got an almost half and half split here as to our replies we can see. So that of those respondents, half thought that their sabbatical had a definable impact on teaching the curriculum, where the other half did not. Now, this raises some really quite potentially alarming questions, in that it suggests that those who are conducting research might be leading an existence in their university where they're not looking to pass on the benefits of their research in terms of teaching particularly at all. As if they're engaged in research as a lone scholar, perhaps, or as part of a group, and barely involved in teaching and passing on the benefit to students. So, a little, in a sense, interesting, but perhaps discouraging. Now, in terms of this question, we asked individuals whether university law departments should offer sabbaticals to academics where the purpose includes preparation of teaching materials or other work relating to teaching. And interestingly here, you can see the proportion has shifted a bit. And there is a majority clearly saying that teaching is important and that time is needed to prepare teaching materials. So you can really say that there's some pretty strong support there for the idea that teaching needs time, and that it's really important that there should be a focus on this away from the humdrum and the day-to-day. Now, if we look at the quote that follows after this from a respondent from a pre-92 university, it's a rather interesting sort of take on this. If universities are to demonstrate a real commitment to delivering quality teaching and learning, then the staff have to have time to develop pedagogically informed courses. Now, the last point is quite telling. If someone is very research active, really spending their time on their research with all the pressures to publish that there are at present, it's really difficult for those individuals to spend their time developing their teaching. Now, we tend to be rather more familiar with this point put the other way around. People are saying, well, I'm so busy with my teaching, I've got no time left to develop my research properly. And that has really had to go on the back burner, and I'm finding life very difficult. But this is the other point of view. There's someone who's really committed to research saying, my teaching is suffering because I'm not having time to think about it. It would be really beneficial to have a sabbatical to think about teaching in that way. So we begin then to think about this idea of pedagogic impact. Now, I have to say that the history of thinking about pedagogic impact really derives from our other reading and the idea of McKeeley, for example. We weren't, at the time we were suggesting this, thinking particularly of the REF, which of course has introduced this new idea of impact in terms of potential criteria for judging research quality. So this research that we've been undertaking seems perhaps to be feeding into that process, but we were thinking about it before the REF, and it seems to be. So we shall take credit for being ahead of the trend. And suddenly our research in our own university seems to be becoming somewhat topical, because those above us are saying, well, this is very interesting, we're looking at impact. But the word impact to academics can mean many different things, and to a number of academics it starts to ring a lot of alarm bells about inclusion into their time, their freedom, and so on. So get to this research question. be required to demonstrate its impact on teaching and or the curriculum? A big question, really, and not necessarily a terribly popular one. That was the answer that our respondents gave to that question. As I say, not a very popular idea put that way. The respondents didn't like the idea of pedagogic impact having to be demonstrated in any direct way at all, which is interesting. Now, it could be that this relates to a fear that the grant of a sabbatical might itself become far too prescriptive and hedged about by all sorts of annoying, tiresome, restrictive conditions. And so looking at some of the comments that we've received, as opposed to just yes, no answers that you see expressed rather crudely and quantitative like that, there is clearly a perception out there in law schools that the bureaucracy, those above us who are managing us, are limiting our freedom of action at every turn, making life difficult, setting more obstacles in our way, and so on. And that the more requirements and conditions you put in, the more unfair it is, the more one is fettering the opportunity of academics to develop sort of untrammeled thinking and really be free to use their time as they wish. So that's the fear. But, and this is really jumping ahead a little bit to some of the interviews that we're beginning to conduct, which is not completely. Once we start talking to people about pedagogic impact and about what has come from the sabbaticals that they themselves have undertaken and what they would like to, then we get some very different, rather interesting ideas. And we see perhaps the self-same person will say, I hate the idea of pedagogic impact having to be developed, saying in this, the next sentence, that I had a sabbatical quite recently, but as a result, I've started a new course in X, I've developed the following teaching materials, I've built a network of research contacts, we are attracting more research students, we're doing this, that, and the next thing. And so, looked at in a more indirect light, even those respondents who are very wary, nervous of the idea of a pedagogic impact statement, those self-same people are also demonstrating how they either have or would like to develop all kinds of extremely imaginative teaching-related activities that have flowed from their sabbatical period. So it's really very interesting, this. And this is a quote from somebody at a pre-1992 university in response to that question about having a requirement for a pedagogic impact. I don't think it's necessarily always possible the future impact in a sabbatical, I think we're missing a word there, demonstrate the future impact in a sabbatical application. This link between research and teaching should be organic rather than forced, and there may well be valuable research projects that have nothing to do with what I teach. So we've got the reservations that having to demonstrate a pedagogic impact would be too predictive, mechanistic, and so on, and too restrictive. But we've also got scope being recognised for imaginative developments that can come from sabbaticals, provided the link is not made too narrow. So, thinking that we have to assess whether there should be such a requirement in a realistic way, in the context of universities where there's a good deal of criticism that they're increasingly bureaucratic, operating in a highly managerial culture, but nevertheless saw in the very interesting talk that we had before lunch, we can see further paradoxes here. We are the recipients of public money. We are increasingly called to account for how we spend our time. Also, we want to achieve things, both in terms of research and provide benefits for our students through better teaching, through new ways of looking at things and developing new teaching methods. And so, should we have a requirement to demonstrate some sort of pedagogic impact? And it ties in with this very difficult question: is that going too far? Would it limit our academic freedom? Should we be able to go in the direction that we want? Or should we be accountable to this degree? Now, I can't give you a concrete conclusion thus far from our researches, because we're still very much